And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello and welcome. It's been a while, but we've missed you, and I'm sure no one has missed us, but here we are anyway.
Did you really miss me?
A little bit, like this much. Anyway, this much.
Okay. Just for the record, she did like maybe a microchasm in between her index and thumb.
But anyway, we've both been very busy doing lots of things. I just came back from Richmond Comic Con, which is GalaxyCon Richmond. I had such a wonderful time. I was so welcomed. If anybody came to my panel, which was an LGBT history of Marvel and Jewish erasure in Marvel in comics, thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for talking to me afterwards. Like, that was huge. I felt really special. I felt kind of important. So thank you. That made my day. And it was wonderful for GalaxyCon to ask me to come back. So thank you so much to GalaxyCon Richmond.
And mine is a very more chaotic tale of travel. Obviously doing the hockey stuff. Traveled up to Newark, New Jersey to watch the New Jersey Devils play the Dallas Stars for the first half of the TXHT road trip. Went out to Denver for a very, very, very disappointing trip. Although I did get to see the Capitals out there, which was nice. I end up getting a sinus infection. So if you hear me cough, no, I do not have the coronavirus. I'm not a coward like everyone else, and I'm still touching my face. How about that? but yeah, I was supposed to do Farpoint, actually, right when I came back from Denver, which is a sci-fi con in Timonium, which is right outside Baltimore, and that never happened for reasons. Well, me getting sick, and then I never heard from them back after submitting an application.
Yeah, so
they asked me to send them, and I love them. So, anyone from Farpoint is listening, I still love you guys. I'm not mad at you guys. It actually worked out great because I felt horrible that weekend, and I was bedridden the entire weekend. We'll talk at AwesomeCon because I know you'll be there. So.
And speaking of AwesomeCon, we might as well do the plug now since you mentioned it.
Yeah. 3 out of 4 panels that we submitted got selected when one's on the wait list.
And that's okay. But I will be at AwesomeCon with my two panels. One is one of the panels that I just did at Richmond Comic Con. And the other one is it's going to be a surprise. And also, thank you so much to LGBTQ Hub for, first of all, welcoming me with open arms last year and taking me back this year with a slightly different panel. So I'm so excited for AwesomeCon DC.
So the panels on my end that were approved was obviously AwesomeMania 8, the pro wrestling fan panel. 8 years of AwesomeCon, 8 years of Mania. Can't go wrong with that. The panel that is on the wait list is this one, Nerdy Notions. We are on the wait list waiting to see, you know, obviously once the schedule goes out and they kind of do their scheduling, they'll see if they have any open spots. If they do, we could get asked to be put in there, or if somebody drops out or gets canceled, you know, there's a chance that we can hop in there too. It's just... everyone asked for Saturdays. That's the prime day. And I know AwesomeMania has been wanting to move to Saturdays for a while because we've been mostly Fridays. And given how we are a very fan oriented panel where everyone gets to talk, we actually went to 2 hours last year.
Nice.
So doing Saturday, we're probably going to jump from probably 50 to 70 people to probably about 100 to 200 people for our panel alone.
Nice. And then my two panels will be All Your Faves Are Jewish, and of course, Who the Bleep Are the Young Avengers? And I'm going to leave you guys to decide what that means. But those are not the only updates that we're talking about before we jump into the title of this video.
There's one more thing for AwesomeCon. There may be a chance I might die before all these panels happen.
You're not going to die.
Because I am running in the AwesomeCon 5K.
See, this is why your AwesomeMania panel needs to be on a Friday, so that at the very least the panel survives, even if you don't.
No, I think it'll be fine. But no, it That's the running joke, though. It's because I've never run a 5K before.
Are you training? Then you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm training. I'm trying to get through this sinus infection so I can breathe from my nose again, but it would be nice. But
anyway.
Next segue.
And this is before we talk about the title of this podcast. And I said video earlier because I'm looking at Michael's face.
I'm very ugly. I'm so sorry.
So I believe the new season of Power Rangers Beast Morphers, took me a second to remember that one, is coming back soon, or is like
no, it's back. It's back already. So yeah. Season two of Beast Morphers, it came back in February.
Which, thank you so much to the gods, be it Nickelodeon or Hasbro or whoever it is, that this is not called, you know, Beast Morphers Mega or Mega Beast.
That's a Hasbro decision.
Thank you, Hasbro. I am prepared to.
It's also the first season without Saban's name on it. Even though Saban is still an executive producer, his name, it's not Saban's Power Rangers anymore. It's just Power Rangers.
Well, somehow I think we'll live. But with that in mind, that means this is the last season of this particular Power Rangers season, which means it's time to recruit the next one. And the
Power Morphicon listing.
Power Morphicon has posted the cast listing. And one of us is eligible, barely.
The other one is not, technically speaking. So I actually have it up in front of me. Become a Power Ranger. Casting now. Casting for season 28 of Power Rangers, the live-action television series for children.
God, I feel so old.
I know. We are auditioning for our new team of Rangers and are looking for young people aged 18 to 25. Applicants can be any ethnicity.
Never mind. I don't pass.
Hold on. You need to be photogenic, charismatic, and energetic. Must be outgoing with a positive attitude. We totally just get outruled on that one.
I can take positive attitude.
Okay. We are seeking superheroes who have some acting experience as well as strong athletic skills such as martial arts, dance, or gymnastics. The roles as male ranger, 18 to 25 years old, any ethnicity, to look 18 years old of age. Average height 5'5" to 6'1" and in size. So fun thing, if I shave my beard, I can look 18-ish, and I'm actually in the height requirements. Female ranger, 18 to 25 years old, any ethnicity, female, to look 18 years of age, average height 5'3" to 5'8". Now here comes the fun stuff.
I get to comment on their requirements for me. So technically I am 2 years over, but I still look like I'm 12. So I can easily pass for, okay, maybe not 12, but definitely like 16 to 18. I still get carded literally all the time. It is annoying, but it's great for my sparkling personality. But as for the height requirement, I am 1 inch off. But since they're not going to measure me, I think I'll be okay.
Well, it's funny that you say that because
self-tape
audition instructions. Please record yourself in front of a clear, uncluttered background wearing form-fitting athletic wear. State your name, age, height, phone number, and email address. Tell us something interesting about yourself. Medium shot. Please face forward, then turn to your left. Pause, then turn to your right. Pause, showing us your profiles. Full body shot, please face forward, then once again turn to your left and right. Wide shot, please finish with a quick physical demonstration of your athletic abilities. Have fun. If you are selected, we will send you a scene to perform. And they actually use AOL for the email address, which is hilarious. Now, I texted my friend who's an agent who actually represents Power Rangers for both acting and convention appearances. So like she represents people from like Mega Force and Time Force and, you know, stuff like that. So I send her a text and I go, you want to help me out? And she goes, you just email casting. They already have our people. And I go, what are my odds? Oh, and by the way, my physical demonstration would be hockey, LOL. She responded right when we started our call to do this recording. Oh, I don't know, dude.
Well, she doesn't make the casting decisions. But think about it. Do you really want to go to New Zealand and work on a non-union contract?
Well, here's the thing, though. And you brought up a good point. So there is a little red and white talk here. Note, all talent must be willing to relocate to Auckland, New Zealand for up to 9 months starting August of 2020. You must have a valid passport with at least 1 year left before renewal, or must be able to obtain one. Luckily, I just renewed my passport last year.
Mine's good till 2023. Come at me.
Mine's good for the next 10 years because I just renewed it because I'm going to Canada this summer to play in a hockey tournament.
Oh, right. I forgot Canada's a thing.
Yeah.
You need a passport to go to Canada.
Yeah. And Mexico.
Yeah. I'm on the East Coast. Mexico exists in a distance. Canada's right next door.
Yeah. But so here's the thing. As we've mentioned, age-wise, I'm 33.
And I'm 27.
By the time they start filming, I'll be 2 months away from my 34th birthday.
And I'll be 28.
So
actually, no, I'll still be 27. Take it back.
So obviously for me, the door has pretty much been slammed shut in front of me. And it's the only thing I would come out, because I have done acting. I have a legitimate IMDb with acting credits. And I pretty much said about 5-6 years ago that I'm pretty much done acting. But there's two things that would get me back into acting. One is if I can do Power Rangers as a Power Ranger. The second one being if I can do a hockey movie. Those are the only two things that will get me out of acting retirement. So, but I'm pretty much, I don't think either of those are ever going to happen. So, sucks to be me. But hey, Hasbro is rebooting the Power Rangers movie, so maybe there is still a chance. And that'll be Union.
One can only hope. So, I have dance experience. I know some basic self-defense, Krav Maga. I'm just a too short. I'm only 5'2", but like, come on.
I'm 5'11".
Oh, you're too tall.
No, the thing was like 5'8" to 6'1".
Oh, I don't mean to be Power Ranger. I just mean in general.
Oh.
But, so I guess that begs the question. Should I audition for Power Rangers? Because like, I've done theater.
I say go for it. I mean, I would put in a tape, but I know they're never going to look at mine because once they find out that I'm 33 years old, they're just going to go, aha!
Well, that's why they have you, like, do a shot of yourself first, and then you tell them your name, your age.
You do the name, age, and all that stuff first, and then you do the shots.
So then we're both out of luck. But honestly, I will say I really need another Jewish Power Ranger. Bridge was great, but come on, we need more Jewish Rangers.
Would be nice. But yeah, I mean, it's...
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, but like, I know for me, realistically, that door is closed unless they ever decide that they want to make an adult a Ranger legitimately and not cast somebody in New Zealand.
Or, well, for me...
No, that's what they do. If you notice, all the adults that they ever have that become Rangers on the show eventually, they're all cast in New Zealand. Look at every past season.
Brain is loading. Hold on, the file is loading. Give it a second. Yeah, that's a good point.
Like certain exceptions would be like, you know, like Time Force, where they actually had them be adults on purpose. They weren't teenagers.
I really wish we could get past this teenager thing, because I think we've had too many seasons of Teen Rangers, and like, I understand that this is a kid show, but you can make them young adults in their 20s. Kids will still watch it.
Yeah, and not only that, but it never hurts to have like one adult ranger lead a younger team. It never
even
hurts.
If it's just like in a mentorship role.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they did that with Jungle Fury. No, not Jungle Fury, Dino Thunder. That's what it was.
They did it with Jungle Fury too.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Except the difference was that, like, in Dino Thunder, Jason David Frank, Tommy was an established ranger, and then he gained another ranger form, basically. Whereas RJ in Jungle Fury was not a ranger. He was just a martial arts master and their like sifu or trainer or something. But honestly, like, I would want to get in if since we're on the topic of, you know, what will get us into, I wouldn't mind getting into acting, but I kind of want to do more like voiceover work. I would love to do voices for cartoons and everything.
You would have loved DerpyCon last year because they had a bunch of voice actors, and actually they're going to have Christina V be at DerpyCon this year, who's a voice actress. And they actually took like all four of the voice actors and did like an inside the voice actor studio thing where they got to work with you and do like workshop stuff with you.
Oh, that's awesome. I really want to go to DerpyCon now. but the other trip for me is like, if voice acting work does involve, I wouldn't mind getting into acting. I don't want to be a Marvel superhero. I'm not that person. I want to be Kevin Feige. That is what I want, guys. I don't need to be in a Marvel movie. I want to be Kevin Feige, like a cuter, shorter, younger Kevin Feige. I'll even wear a baseball cap.
Looks at what's on my head, baseball cap.
Anyway, with that in mind, since I think Kevin Feige is the perfect segue, let's talk about the most boring movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Thor Dark World. I like how we just paused. We're just like, Thor Dark World. So here's
the audience is already asleep. We don't even have to continue. But
So for Thor Dark World, there's a lot of moving pieces on this one because one of the things that we were talking about before we started recording was the fact that Natalie Portman politicked heavily to get Patty Jenkins to direct the film. And then once she didn't get the film,
she whined like a little girl.
Yeah. And obviously,
I'll be the one to say that. What's she gonna do? Come at me?
And honestly, and this is something that I'll say about like my Denver trip. When you started off with such a negative tone, what do you expect is going to happen throughout the entirety of the trip, or in this case, the film production?
That it's not going to be that great because you're still bitter and cranky and whiny.
Yeah.
And look, I think there's nothing. Look, I think this is what I have to say. I think Feige and Marvel, for the most part, do a really good job of getting the people to fit the vision. And sometimes that means, you know, like with the case for Ant-Man, even though we haven't gotten there, you know, there was a director change, but the movie itself was still really good, which is why, you know, when everybody's freaking out when there was a Doctor Strange 2 is having a director change, I'm not worried about it. I think sometimes there are conflicts of visions, and at the end of the day, you're not just making a movie, you're making a Marvel movie. And I think that not everybody understands the difference in that.
And it has to fit within the universe. And especially for the phase that you're in, it needs to work and to help connect the pieces going into the next film, because that story is going to give another layer to the next movie that gives another layer, and then so forth until you hit like where we were with Infinity War and Endgame.
And speaking of that, I do want to touch a little bit on what we know for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And that's mostly the fact that like the original movie was going to be kind of horror-esque, which on the one hand I understand, but on the other hand, like horror is a very specific genre that a lot of people don't like. So the only thing I really wanted for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is I wanted Steve Ditko level trippiness. Like that is what a Doctor Strange movie needs. It needs the ghost and spirit of Steve Ditko.
And who knows, you may still get that.
I want that. See, to me, I think that's more important to a Doctor Strange story than a horror-esque genre. I think you can make that, but like, I don't think the Marvel Universe needs horror.
But the thing is, though, is that at the same time, as much as this is a Doctor Strange film, it's also going to be a Wanda film.
True, that still doesn't mean it should be a horror film.
Yeah. But
nobody wants a jump scare.
But anyways, getting back to Thor Dark World.
Yes, so let's begin with, we'll talk about the background and behind the scenes stuff as we go forward, but let's start with where the movie starts, which is in darkness. And there's a voiceover by Odin, played by Anthony Hopkins.
Great choice of casting there. can't go wrong with Anthony Hopkins as Odin.
Academy Award winner. Is he an Academy Award winner?
Pretty sure he is.
He better be. So Anthony Hopkins, he's talking about like the dark elves from Valheim or something, or wherever they're from, the elf land. And there's like this big battle where Odin's father fights in, and they defeat the dark elves, but the dark elves have like this. So the worst dark elf of all was Malekith, who wanted to put our world into an eternal night because apparently he likes the dark. So then they introduced the Aether, which is one of the Infinity Stones, or Reality Stone, whatever you want to call it. Was it the Reality Stone?
I believe so. Hold on. I'm looking up something on Anthony Hopkins real quick.
So
anyway. Yes, he has won one Oscar.
Good. Okay. So anyway, so they use the Aether to like super jump their like elfnessness, and they become monsters. It actually makes it sense that this would be the Reality Stone. This is such a waste of a Reality Stone. I'm just saying. The Reality Stone and the Time Stone. The Reality Stone was the biggest waste of an Infinity Stone in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Fight me. Anyway. So basically, they attach themselves to the Liquid Gel, which is ancient Infinity Destruction, whatever. So King Bor, that's Thor's grandfather, he fought in this battle. The elves used bits of the Aether to get stronger. There was a convergence of realms. Yeah, that's important. And then there's something about like, this is the time to unleash the Aether when all the stars align perfectly, basically. We're never really given a reason why this is the perfect time to use the Aether. I guess because the valley between the realms is weaker and it makes it easier to go, but you have a Reality Stone. So like that kind of, it seems kind of dumb to me. But anyway, Asgard basically stole the Aether, which kind of made the elves easy to defeat. And Malekith sacrifices his people and escapes, and Odin says that he was defeated, and that on Grandpa's orders, the Aether is buried somewhere that I'm sure no one will ever find it. So flash forward, Loki is in chains, brought to before Odin and Frigga, and there's a cute little mommy son moment, and Odin orders everyone gone to speak to the prisoner alone. Loki basically laughs. He doesn't get the point. He wanted to rule them he's like, oh, I would have ruled the Earthlings as a benevolent god. And Odin is just not having it. He's like, we're not gods. And he talks about, like, basically Loki, Odin gets called out on basically adopting Loki and never telling him and all that jazz. But Loki wants the throne, as is his birthright, which it's really not, but what he has a birthright, it's just not on Asgard. It's weird because he's one of the frost giants.
Yeah.
He had to have been the runt of the litter. I'm just saying that now. He was the runt of the litter. Let's see here. So Odin and Loki. He was destined to, Odin tells Loki that he saved him because Loki was actually destined to die. Like I said, rent of the litter. Frigga is the reason that Loki doesn't face death. Apparently mommy advocated on his behalf, and he's being sent to the dungeon, which is not nearly as scary as Odin makes it out to be. It's like a cell with like nice lighting and like a magical shield so that he can't get out. He has a bed. He's got some chairs.
So essentially, he got it better than Robin Hood in Men in Tights.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
And less chains.
And there it's the dungeon.
See, that was a legit dungeon. This is more of like, this is the prisoner section of our palace walls. Anyway.
We had to get our Mel Brooks in there somewhere.
Right? So if anybody forgot why Loki is being sent to jail, it's because of all of the crap he pulled on Earth. See events of Avengers and the first Thor movie. There's also that part where he let frost giants enter Asgard, yada yada. Anyway, Thor meanwhile is fixing some of Loki's mess, so he's on Vanaheim. There's a battle. Lady Sif is being a badass, and then Thor just kind of lands in the middle of all this and like finishes it off.
Which there was a great line of like, why didn't you finish it off with the big one? Why didn't we start with the big one?
Yeah, what's really interesting, and this is actually one of the positive things about this movie, is that you see that the three warriors and Lady Sif actually have different fighting styles, which I thought was an interesting note. So one is more dainty in their fighting. You got like Zachary Levi's character, like with the,
which that was a recasting, by the way.
That was a recasting because Jonathan Dallas, I believe that's Jonathan Dallas, who was in the first Thor film, was actually filming Once Upon a Time and the schedules didn't match up.
Yep.
Which is similar reasons why the Lady Sif is not in Thor Ragnarok. Which means Sif is alive somewhere and you cannot tell me otherwise.
So actually, that's not the reason why she wasn't in it. Back injury. She actually had an injury.
Oh, no.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why she couldn't do
Thor Ragnarok. We love the Lady Sif.
But at the same time, there wasn't really a role for her to play in Ragnarok.
Unless the role was to die. So yeah.
Exactly.
Like, we'll get to this when we talk about Ragnarok, but like I'm glad she wasn't in this movie. And like I need Lady Sif to come back. And honestly, I would really much rather have her in Thor Love and Thunder than Jane Foster, but we'll get to that.
Eventually down the road when we get to that movie.
So then the Vanaheim, whoever the bad guys are in Vanaheim, they sent in their big guy. And Sif gives
the
him
the Dark Elves.
That wasn't the Dark
Elves. No, that wasn't the Dark Elves. I'm jumping ahead.
We haven't gotten to the Dark Elves yet.
Yeah,
we just got their backstory. So Thor accepts their surrender. The big guy laughs, and then he gets turned into a rock pile by Thor. He was made of rocks. Interesting. So the battle is won. There's a party afterwards, and Hogan's people, the Vanaheim was being liberated. That's Hogan's people. He's one of the Warriors Three. So he stays, and then Heimdall brings everybody back to feast because peace is on the horizon. The realms are in freedom. Everything is happy, you know, so we're going to ruin that. So Odin's crows are actually seen. There's some training. Odin bonded something. So there's a question of Thor's heart, and there's a hint between Frigga and Lady Sif where like Lady Sif is like, I want that. And Frigga's like, yeah, you do. I'm all for this. And Thor's just like, I miss Jane Foster. So there's the question of Thor versus which ship is better, Thor Sif, Thor Jane. So Odin says that it's time for Thor to take over as King of Asgard, and to enjoy himself for now. Cue the obligatory shirtless scene because we need that before the party. Then there's drinking. Thor and Sif bond. Apparently Thor vanishes each night, and when he does, it's revealed a little bit later that when he vanishes every night, he goes to see Heimdall to ask about Jane. Speaking of Jane, we flash forward to London, where Jane is on a date with the guy from the IT crowd. The one with the Irish accent?
Yeah.
Irish or Scottish? I think he was Irish. But the Irish guy on the IT, okay, so the white guy on the IT crowd. So she's on a date with him, and there's so much waste in the scene, like her nervousness, and she keeps repeating Seabass over and over and over again, which I think is just like the personification of Natalie Portman's frustration over this entire movie. But she's on a date with this guy, and it's awkward. The guy doesn't have a clue that this is stupid, and then Darcy randomly shows up and just like sits down and grabs some bread and butter, like she owns the place.
I love Darcy, by the way.
She's okay. We'll talk about her. Apparently Jane's been depressed, and there's also strange activity that warrants her attention. And Jane's like, oh, I'm on a date. I don't want to deal with this. Meanwhile, Darcy's trying to convince Jane to go after these readings. But let's talk about Eric Selvig, who apparently has gone Coco for Cocoa Puffs and lost his marbles, who gets arrested naked at Stonehenge.
My type of man right there.
So Darcy has also, this is the part where things get weird. Darcy gets her own intern,
which was adorable.
She's really mean to him. Like, it's kind of unnecessary. But anyway, so Jane, the readings apparently match Thor's, or the same readings from the night that Thor appeared. And so Jane, Darcy, and Ian, the intern, go to the docks into like this old strange warehouse. There's a bunch of kids, and like I said, Darcy's a jerk to this intern. He like carries the equipment. He like drives. Like, she was really mean. But they go to the origin site of the energy. There's kids there. They found something, which is a truck. And like, I guess because of the reality warping energy, the kid can just like, there's like energy around it. So he just like lifts the truck like it's like nothing.
Nothing.
And then they go to the stairs and there's like this portal. And they like drop stuff and either it comes back or it doesn't. And then Jane follows another signal. And again, this is all similar to New Mexico. And she finds it to the origin point alone. She kind of gets pulled into somewhere. And she is then the ether. Because, you know, first rule of quantum, you know, of being a physicist is to touch stuff. Like, she's a bad scientist. Physicists don't touch stuff. Although, maybe they do. But I guess smashing atoms together and touching weird random energy is really not the same thing. So anyway, the ether bonds to her. And then we kind of, I think, flash back to Thor and Heimdall, and we see that Jane's in trouble or something. So Thor appears. Well,
Heimdall was like, I don't see her. I don't know where she is.
Yeah, she disappears from his magical view. And we talk about that the convergence of the nine realms is imminent.
Yeah, and one of the great things is that when Thor comes down and Jane comes back to London, to that spot, it's raining. Except around Jane.
Because the ether.
No. The ether. That was Thor.
Oh, right.
Because Thor made it where it's raining all over the place, except in the circle of where she is, because as Jane walks back over to Thor.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It just, right. The rain just drops on Darcy, and she's like, really? And then Jane asks Thor, is this you? And he goes, yes. And then she. He goes, can you like stop it? And he's like, oh yeah, sorry. He like snaps his fingers and it stops raining.
Anyway, so Thor takes Jane back to Asgard because she's sick after like something weird happens.
Yeah, with the police, they tried apprehending her and the ether just pushed everyone away.
No, yeah, so she releases this energy and Thor returns her to Asgard and they put her under a quantum field generator because magic is science. And this is a scene I enjoy because it's kind of adorable because it's likening that like the way that magic is magic and science is science, but that doesn't mean they're not similar to each other, but there's a clear difference. So I actually like the magic is science thing because it shows a clear differentiation. But so they're looking at her and then Odin appears and he's like, bring her back to Earth. And Thor's like, she's sick. And Odin's like, well, they have doctors on Earth. And the guards take her, and then she repels them. And Odin's like, oh, shit, this is a problem. And he recognizes the ether.
And might I add, because you said the S word, this is the first also Marvel movie that really starts bringing in the S word.
Really?
Yeah, because Darcy says it when Thor leaves to go to Asgard with Jane. And then there's a couple other moments where it's actually said. Because, like, I think Avengers, they alluded to it but didn't say it. But Thor was the first one where the S word was kind of used more than once.
Well, okay then.
Interesting thing. Because as you notice, as we get closer to, like, where we are now in the MCU, they say the S word a lot more.
Yep. So anyway, Odin warns that like the ether is gonna slowly kill Jane Foster because she can't handle all of the energy in it, and that this is like leading to something bad happening. Meanwhile, somehow, whether it's connected to the ether, we don't know. Malekith like wakes up when the ether is released, and he turns one of his like henchmen into a bad guy, to a bigger bad guy. There's also like a tender moment between Frigga and Loki where Frigga tries to help him understand and Frigga's like, he's like your father. And Loki's like, he's not my father. And she's like, oh, well, I guess I'm not your mom then. Like, oh snap. Frigga is amazing. She's so underutilized in all the Thor, in all the movies, like just all of them.
But one of the things that, and we've talked about this before, but with the way Endgame, how they used Thor Dark World in Endgame, it redeemed a lot of things, especially Frigga.
I think Renee Russo, yes, who plays Frigga, she said that that was the most lines she's had in all of the three all of the other movies combined. I believe that. She's beautiful. Like, she does such an amazing Frigga. But anyway, so they try to, I guess, contain the ether. It doesn't work while there's this attack going on. Throughout the scuffle, Frigga, I think there's another moment where, like, Frigga and Jane Foster have a cute little chat, and Frigga's like, oh, you're the boy my son loves, and she's like, oh, cool, this isn't awkward at all. Thank you for the pretty clothes. The costumes on Asgard are so gorgeous, like, really. So I think then Frigga dies in the process of protecting Jane.
Yeah, because the Dark Elves did a massive attack.
Yep, so the Dark Elves then go, but they don't get to Jane, which, like, I don't remember exactly. I think Thor stops them.
But before that, there's a moment where when Malekith's top guy, like, demonized himself with whatever he had to make him a bigger monster.
I said that.
There's a moment where Loki, the guy is looking at Loki because he's freeing everyone else, and he looks at Loki and he's like, nah, you can stay in your cage, and starts walking away. And Loki goes, you should try the stairs on the left. Loki essentially gave him the directions of where to go to do more damage to Asgard.
And then inadvertently be responsible for killing mommy.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's awkward.
Yeah.
So let's see. Frigga dies from her injuries. Thor manages to disfigure Malekith with a bolt of lightning, and then the Dark Elves retreat. There's a funeral, and Odin has Jane imprisoned, which, like, I get you're peeved, but it's not exactly, like, Jane's fault. Well, it kind of is Jane's fault. Because you don't lick, you should never lick science unless you're a geologist. Licking science is okay, I guess, if you're a geologist. So let's see. Thor knows that basically Malekith is going to come back for Jane, even though Odin has ordered him not to leave Asgard. Odin is, like, grief stricken and he's pissed, which, like, is totally understandable. Thor comes up with a plan to, like, escape, I guess. They're just committing treason. Heimdall distracts Odin, and Thor actually has Loki freed in the process. Because Loki, as we've established in the first Thor movie, knows all of, like, the secret passages in and out of the Asgard or whatnot. And there's, like, this cool moment where they're, like, escaping on a ship. So Lady Sif and the Warriors Three help them all. They hijack a ship, they make their way out of Asgard and through a portal, and they end up in Svalterheim. So Jane's body's I guess the ether is draining her life, which, like, whatever. And there's a moment where, like, Malekith is, like, trying to suck it away, I guess, which, like, we're never really given an explanation how the ether works. This is a very big oversight, Marvel Universe, because this is arguably one of the most, if there was going to be one stone to rule them all, I think this would be the one. That, or I just have a soft spot for reality warping powers in general. So, as anybody who knows me knows who my favorite superheroes are. So, Thor attempts to destroy the ether, which obviously doesn't work. There's a battle.
Loki dies. Loki
comes to their aid and dies. Allegedly dies. But Loki, like, has a pretty epic death. He, like, pushes, I think, a bomb of some kind into the chest of the bad guy and then, like, explodes or something, like a sword. It actually has no effect. He then seizes Loki and drives the sword into his body. Wow. It's in Loki's body. Funny enough, this is not dissimilar to how Loki dies in the MCU. Like, for realsies.
Oh, you mean strangulation by Thanos?
I mean, sword through the heart or strangulation? Loki apologizes to Thor as he, like, breathes his alleged last breath and seemingly dies in his arms. He mourns Loki for, like, 2.5 seconds before they enter a cave, and they see, like, all of the missing stuff, like the cell phone,
Well, the cell phone, she has her phone on her.
So, like, she gets reception, and then she sees, like, keys in a water bottle or something that the kids were throwing, and Darcy was throwing, because Darcy is a child. And they, as they go deeper into the cave, it ends up being a portal, which brings them to London.
All right. But, hey, they have a car, and they know they have cell phone reception in the dark world.
But
you just was like, shut up, Mike, you know.
Let's see. So Jane has been in Asgard, Darcy had been trying to reach S.H.I.E.L.D., which is hilarious. Like, clearly she had them on speed dial. When she and the intern basically get the news about Eric, that he's been running around naked on Stonehenge, and they put him into a retirement home. They go to get him out, and he's like, basically, he hasn't really been the same. Basically, the summary is that he hasn't really been the same since the events of New York, where Loki hypnotized him. And like, which, like, to be honest, like, I get on the one hand, but at the same time, like, Hawkeye's fine.
Well, we haven't seen Hawkeye yet.
He's fine.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that okay? Fine. So Hawkeye, we don't see again until Age of Ultron.
Yep.
So, like, there is a massive time span between Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron. So, like, we don't know how Hawkeye is really
He's fine. Dealing with it. There's a scene where he's, like, dealing with it in the first Avengers. He's fine. I get to make fun of Hawkeye, okay? I have reasons. Anyway, this is kind of like Selvig is, like, dealing, I guess, with, like, PT, post-Loki syndrome. PLD.
PLD. Post-Loki syndrome. Post-traumatic Loki syndrome. There you go. PTLS.
There you go. PTLD. I feel like Loki's a disorder. Anyway, so Loki, let's see. So then Sylvie has been studying the effects of, like, the upcoming convergence for some reason. Like, we don't know what triggered this or, like, why he thought he needed to, like, actually investigate this. So he was studying the effects of the convergence. He developed a device which could teleport people from different worlds, and he didn't tell anybody about this. I guess he was. Does that mean S.H.I.E.L.D. let him go, or he quit? I feel like he quit.
Either that, or he just had a psychotic episode, and they're just monitoring him.
Yeah, but like, if are they monitoring like the same way they monitored Tony Stark in Iron Man 2? Because if that's the case, they really fudged it up this time. Because he literally develops, like, incredible technology, and they don't notice. So they meet up with Thor and Jane, and Selvig tells them that the people that lived in England before the last one, built... Oh, so this is where Stonehenge comes in. And yes, I'm going to admit fully here, I'm reading this off the MCU Wikipedia wiki page because, like, I couldn't sit through this movie again. I sat through a good chunk of it, but, so, they meet up with Thor and Jane, there's Stonehenge is one of the pieces of the previous convergence. The certain objects are a map to where the convergence would reach its peak. And apparently that's going to be Greenwich, which, like, what are the odds that Convergence is going to happen in the exact same time, like, in the exact same place last time, or within the vicinity, and this technology of ancient lore was somehow able to, calculate that? Like, that's a stretch, even for comic books. Let's see. So, location is revealed. Foster tells them that Malekith is going to spread the ether throughout the portals, and which is kind of like what Odin basically told us the entire premise of the bad guys, that they're going to plunge the world into eternal darkness for some reason. Like, I get they're the dark elves, but like, can they still be the dark elves with light out, or like, is it like vampires? So they go to Greenwich with with Selvig's technology or something. There's portals opening up all over the city, which is the convergence, which is where, like, all of the planets align and whatnot, or all of the realms align. And Malekith arrives, because I guess he followed the convergence. There's a battle. There's a fight. They, like, So when they're like falling through different realms, that part's kind of cool, but I feel like it was very underutilized. Like they could have done more with this. Let's see. So Selvig uses the last of the device to teleport it away. Wait, hold on. So the fight, using their device, Thor basically impales Malekith with one of the devices that Selvig has developed, which. And then Jane Foster teleports him back to Smelterheim, which were they on Smelterheim? Because when the movie opened, or when the movie shows them in the present time, they were in like space on a spaceship.
For which movie?
In this movie, so it says, according to the wiki, it says that allowing Jane Foster teleports him back to Svelterheim, stopping his attack. But like, was that Svelterheim? And it's just like a seat of darkness in space?
No, that was the same place where they where Loki died.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, 'cause that's where they did the battle and that's how Malekith got
Right.
the ether.
That makes sense.
One of the great things, though, was when during this whole sequence, is because of the convergence, one of the vehicles is floating, and Darcy's intern notices this, and he actually uses that to his advantage to take out some of the Dark Elves.
Yes, he does, because Ian is not stupid.
That was
He
funny
is
how he did that.
the unsung hero of this movie.
But then when he gets kissed by Darcy, he doesn't know what to do.
So a little bit later, Thor returns to Asgard and Odin congratulates him on his victory and that, we get that he committed crimes, but Odin says that, Thor will one day make a wise king and Thor's
Well,
not.
before we get there, you're missing one key thing.
What am I missing?
So in Smeldheim, you actually see a Asgardian guard.
No, I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that.
That no, but this was before this.
All right, go ahead.
So you see an Asgardian guard with the Loki glow happen, and the guard then shows up to Odin to let him know about what he found. And
And
then
what
it
happened, essentially?
cuts out, but essentially what happens is that and
Hold on.
you don't really find this out till Thor Ragnarok,
Well, no,
but
it's actually revealed in the scene that I was just talking
oh
about.
yeah. But the thing is that then you find out that Odin is now being played by
Hold
so Thor.
on. I had this whole build-up set up. All right, we're gonna rewind, and I'm doing the setup. Okay, so Thor goes to talk to Odin, and Odin is all like, "You broke the law, and but you're gonna be a wise king one day, and I'm proud of you." And Thor says, he's not ready to be king and take over the throne. And Thor leaves Asgard to be with Jane Foster. But as he after he leaves, we see Odin shift in to reveal Loki. See, I had this whole creative buildup going. Don't let me toot my own horn occasionally. Anyway, so Loki faked his death in order to get what he always wanted, and that is to have the throne of Asgard. End of movie. But then we have the after credit scene where Sif and the Volstagg, which is the big fat one, hand over the captured ether to
The
the
Collector,
collector.
played by Antonio Banderas.
No.
The Collector?
The collector was what? There's hold
Oh no,
on.
not Antonio Banderas, Benicio del Toro. That's who it was.
There we go. I was like,
Sorry,
oh.
I got the wrong actor. My bad.
Anyway, so he appears very eager to take it, but he's kind of wondering, like, why are the Asgardians just like don't keep it in their own vault? And we are reminded that the Tesseract is still in, Odin's chambers.
And it's not wise to have two reality stone or two infinity stones near each other.
And this is the first time I think we actually hear the words Infinity Stone mentioned,
It is.
which is very significant. And then as they leave, the collector makes a comment as one down, five to go. I think we also see like the Soviet space dog or something in the background, or we see something that is
You
like.
see actually quite a few things.
Yeah.
One of the other things that ends up being seen is that you actually see What was it? You remember the show Arrested Development?
No, I never watched it.
Okay, so one of the characters, he tried being part of the Blue Man Group.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
Not the actual actor David Cross, but somebody who looks kind of like him. He's in one of those pods.
Woo. So yeah, and then like it's revealed later that like the Frost, like Thor's happy on Earth with Jane, and the Frost Beast is still running around, and that is basically the plot of this movie. There's so many, first of all, let me go back to my notes here.
The notes say this movie is complete trash.
First note: complete waste of Christopher Eccleston. He barely even spoke English. Like, as far as I knew, people were, like, super hyped because the Dark Elves were, like, a super interesting thing in the comics. I don't read Thor comics, but it's just so disappointing because, like, the bad guy's entire goal is not really clear. We're never really given an explanation of why they have the ether, how the ether even works. And it's very confusing about whether the reality part of this is the Convergence or the Reality Stone or both. Very few things are explained in this movie, and we're just kind of told to just go with it.
Hey, I need you to know something very important. Just go with it, okay?
Okay, I have a note here, but I don't know what this means. It says different Blondie.
Different Blondie?
I don't know.
Maybe it's about Vandrell, the casting change.
Thank you.
The casting change from Jonathan Dallas to Zachary Levi.
That's important. This movie has a lack of direction, and it does have a kind of a sort of connection to Age of Ultron, because it's all leading up to the whole Infinity War and Thanos and stuff in other later movies, but like. It's very obvious that like Marvel needed this to set up another Infinity Stone, and I think there was a better way to do it. First of all, like Jane Foster is so annoying in this movie. I didn't really find her annoying the first time around, but the second time around she's a little annoying.
How much of that is circumstance of what went down with her trying to get Patty Jenkins?
And like, look, I think Patty Jenkins did wonders with Wonder Woman, and she's a wonder in and of herself.
And we can't wait to see Wonder Woman 84 to see what Patty does with that.
Like, I have complete faith in Patty, but there are many different reasons why Marvel went with the director that they did. And I think it's I don't think it had anything to do with Patty Jenkins being a woman. I really don't. But maybe I'm wrong.
If I remember right, the big thing was that Natalie Portman wanted a female director.
Yeah, Natalie Portman made a big stink about how she really wanted to work with a female director. Like, honey, you can work with a female director anytime. You are an Academy Award winning actress. You could pretty much, well, this was before that, but you can do anything. Like, literally nobody's stopping you from getting onto a project with a female director if that is what you want. But it kind of feels like Marvel was somehow obligated to hire Patty Jenkins just because Natalie wanted her. There, I said it, and I have no regrets. But ultimately, the director of this movie was Alan Taylor. Kenneth Branagh, who directed the first Thor movie, withdrew from the project. It was filmed in Surrey, England, and in Iceland and London. God, this movie is so boring. It's really boring. Like I said, Ian is the unsung hero of this movie. I think Selvig's psyche needed more development. A little bit more explanation would have been better.
And something to keep in mind is that this film and Ultron were the two movies that almost made Christopher Hemsworth quit the role of Thor. Because he was not happy with the direction of Thor. And then when Thor Ragnarok happened, that's when he went, okay, this is a lot better now compared to where you know, it was with Dark World and Ultron.
And I can understand his frustration, but there's... Thor is a very specific character, and I think in a lot of ways it was hard to... I get where he's coming from. I think the direction that the script went in Thor Dark World was very, very poor. Don Payne and Robert Rodat, I don't know anything about them. Looking at their work now, it seems like Don Payne has been a writer on sitcoms. Can't Hurry Love, Pride and Joy, and The Simpsons. He's written several Simpsons episodes. He wrote the first Thor. He also wrote Fantastic Four and the Rise of the Silver Surfer. And they hired him? Oh, dear.
Oh, man. That was a movie I remember seeing in theaters. And I went to the movie, the manager, and go, I want a free ticket to something else that's good. And then I went to go see Hot Fuzz.
And then Robert Rodat, interestingly enough, actually, he was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for writing Spielberg's epic Saving Private Ryan. And then he wrote The Catcher Was a Spy, which I believe did very well. It was
that was the Paul Rudd movie where he played. Right. Yeah,
that movie was okay. So there are two like okay-ish writers, one okay-ish writer, and I don't really understand what happened in the script. So Jenkins was hired for the project. Jenkins would direct the sequel, and Natalie Portman would return to star. Disney also moved the release date to the film, blah, blah, blah. So in 2011, Jenkins actually exited the project, stating, I have had a great time working at Marvel. We parted on very good terms, and I look forward to working with them again. Jenkins felt she could not have made a good film out of Thor 2 because I wasn't the right director. I could have made a great Thor if I could have done the story that I wanted to do. And I honestly agree with her. I think the story was wrong. I don't think the directing was wrong. I really wanted to see more of Thor and Sif. Like, there was some really awesome chemistry between the actors. It would have been amazing. And I'm glad that she said what she said, because I think this is a very... That's a very nice way of saying that, like, things didn't work out. But here's Alan Taylor's quote. It says, "The main difference I have from, you know, the director of Thor 1 is really to do with look and tone. Things look really dirty. The first Thor was quite shiny, and it was very conscious, smart choice. When I came in, I wanted to get more of a sense of the Norse mythology, the Viking quality, the texture and weight of the history." Did we see any of that in this movie?
No. Well, no. Well, we did, but only in the feast.
We did, but we didn't. It was like, you know, you could have done so much more with this, but you didn't. And again, this goes back to the script. The script itself was not good. This is also, I think, the beginning of kind of like Marvel's Disney's sort of influence in this. Yeah, it's, God, this, look, I'm just looking through, like, some of the, like, the trivia stuff for this movie, and, like, even the trivia is kind of boring. This is the last movie written by Don Payne. Ooh, he died from bone cancer before the movie was released. I'm so sorry. That's a very sad fact. Thor accidentally destroys a statue of his grandfather, Bor, and Loki wisecracks that he killed him. Which I guess something that relates to something that happened in the comics. Oh, I do. There is one scene that I do really love about this movie that I forgot. There's a scene where Thor and Loki are walking through the palace and Loki shapeshifts into Captain America. Chris Evans deserved an Oscar just for that, for playing Loki playing Captain America. It was beautiful. I didn't see Captain America. I saw specifically Loki as Captain America. And I think this is, I think, one of those moments that really makes an actor. What do you keep looking at?
Oh, sorry. So, you remember that wrestling podcast thing that I do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a pay-per-view going on at the same time.
Wow. I feel loved and appreciated.
Hey, I'm contributing. What's the one thing I always say at the beginning of the show? It's Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan. Just kind of a guided person that kind of guides things a little bit. You're on a good track. You're good. You don't need me right now. It's okay. I'm listening to you.
Seeing it's just amazing seeing an actor playing a character Grimm did it really well, where you had Sasha Royce pretending to be the Nick Burkhardt, who was pretending to be Captain Renard, and it worked. It's so good. And this is the moment where you can tell an actor is doing a great job, because they can play someone else playing themselves.
Have you seen the latest Jumanji movie?
The last one that came out this year? No.
Yeah, okay. So it's coming out on DVD on March 27th, St. Patrick's Day. Haha. I highly recommend it, because I saw it in theaters, and the exact same thing that you're talking about, seeing The Rock act like Danny DeVito.
Oh.
And Kevin Hart act like Danny Glover is literally the greatest thing ever. It's hilarious.
Enough, enjoyed the first one.
What?
I said I weirdly enough enjoyed the first one, but continue.
Well, actually, technically, this is the third, Jumanji and the fourth in the series.
No, this is a reboot, bite me.
Actually, it's kind of not, because it's down the road, and they do a lot of stuff that pays tribute to Robin Williams.
Right, but my issue is how did the original Jumanji game, after all of the crap that the kids went through in the first movie, just randomly ends up in, a school or something?
So
is that where it was?
No. So, no? Okay. So in the Jumanji update, I guess you can say, what happens is that a father finds the board game on the beach, and he brings it to his son, and his son ignores it and just plays video games, because obviously it's years down the road. It's like a couple decades later from the events of when Robin Williams. The board game recognizes that, and it turns itself into a video game cartridge. And then when he goes to play the game, that's when it sucks him into the game. And then because he disappeared, 30 years later, the video game console finds itself in the school, in the storage area. That's how they get it. Yeah.
Fine. let's see. So around the 26-minute mark, the scene where Dr. Jane Foster slaps Thor, forgot that happened, had to be shot several times because Natalie Portman kept fake slapping Chris Hemsworth to avoid hurting him. After about 30 takes, she was slapping him for real. At around 1 hour and 2 minutes later on, where Jane, Dr. Foster first meets Loki and punches him, Portman actually hit Tom Hiddleston. This time around, it only took 5 takes. Poor Tom Hiddleston. Poor Chris Hemsworth. They did create this language for the Dark Elves, which was kind of cool, but.
Yeah, to you too.
I mean, honestly, they could have spoken English. I get, other people would have been mad that, how can they speak English? But, this movie had, you put so much effort into making an entire language that you didn't bother to put into, other aspects, plot, that, plot's kind of important, children.
Well, there was a plot. It just wasn't properly executed, essentially.
Let's see. It's evidence that the English children have done more than tumble a cement truck or make shoes and keys vanish. When Jane, Darcy, and Ian first arrived, they passed through a container of Henge stacked up by the youngsters using the gravitational anomaly in the same way that the Stonehenge was built during the previous convergence. Nice. So interestingly enough, the mid-credit scene with the collector was actually directed by James Gunn.
Because that was the lead in for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Doop, Guardians.
Because, well, because keep in mind, the next movie after this is Winter Soldier. The very next movie after that is Guardians of the Galaxy.
So, and then it's Age of Ultron, yeah.
Yep, and then it's Age of Ultron. So they're building to the moment, because the very next movie after that to end this phase that we're in is actually Ant-Man. Because then the very next...
end on a happy note.
And again, because we're going to start phase three on a very, very down note. Very dramatic note, I guess.
You could say it's a very divisive note.
Yes.
Let's see. Yes, shockingly enough, Christopher Eccleston did like playing Malekith. I don't blame him. He accepted it for the money. Again, do not blame him. He especially disliked the long hours he had to spend in makeup for the look. Agreed. He claimed that the process took 7 to 8 hours in the first day, about 6.5 hours afterwards, but the Marvel had lied to him by not informing him that these extreme makeup requirements beforehand. So, Marvel...
But, okay, okay, hold on, time out. Before we go after Marvel on this, if you're going to be playing a Dark Elf, and you know that you're going to be playing a Dark Elf, don't you think you're going to have to sit in the makeup chair just a little bit?
Yeah, that's valid, but also, like...
And not only that, but these guys are given homework now. They are literally going, here's your character, here are the comic books on your character. Read about it. So he's looking at it going like, so that's what the Dark Elf looks like. I'm probably going to be in the makeup chair for a while.
Yeah, but there's a while and 8 hours. But then again, I think some of this could have been achieved... I don't know. But no, I think that's a fair point. I think he should have been a little bit more prepared for the role before he took it. And then, like, done his research.
I mean, well, that's the thing. They gave him the stuff to do the research. Whether he did the research or not when they gave it to him, that's another story for another day. And yep. He will be at AwesomeCon, by the way.
Christopher Eccleston, I love you. You're my favorite doctor.
So, just throwing that out there. He will be at AwesomeCon.
I'll come say hi. He was a great doctor. Like, I like him and other stuff. But I also don't really blame him completely, because they did the Dark Elves dirty. We are given, like, none of the elves have personality except Malekith. We're given no... We had more cultural notes for... Or actually, no, I take that back. We had about similar cultural notes for the Frost Giants. But given how much more of this movie you have the Dark Elves in, like, they should have done a little bit more world building. But there's a lot they could have done better, in my opinion, in this movie. But so to give an update of where we are now, in terms of these characters, Jane Foster is unfortunately coming back for Thor, Love and Thunder, Joy, and they've hinted at Lady Thor. Woo. By the way, I found this out at GalaxyCon. Apparently Thor number one, where Jane Foster becomes Thor, is actually worth about $100. I laughed and I felt really, really bad for the guy at the comic book booth. Cause he was like, I was like, wait, it's seriously worth $100. He's like, apparently, and you're not the first to point this out. I'm like, yeah, I can't imagine. He's like, I really want to get rid of it. I'm like, burn it. But, all right. That's a little harsh. I'm going to say this now. I did not like Jane Foster as Thor at all. I think Thor has his journey isn't complete yet. And honestly, when we get to Ragnarok, I have some thoughts about Taika's vision for this. But we can tackle that when we get there. Speaking of other actors...
It'll be a while.
Eric Selvig will appear in Age... He appears briefly in Age of Ultron. I think that's the last time we see him.
That's the last time we do see him. I think they might have done something with him for Endgame, where, like, they show the people who got zapped.
Yeah.
Or snapped or whatever.
Very briefly, if anything. And then Darcy will actually, weirdly, for some reason, because somebody wanted her back, will appear in WandaVision. And since we haven't really recorded since the Super Bowl, I think we should also touch a little bit upon that trailer.
Which one?
The Super Bowl trailer for Disney Plus and WandaVision and Falcon. And all right, so very briefly, because this is probably very long now.
I don't even remember the trailer, so you go ahead for it.
So we got some hints at Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is going to be, the rumor is, and this is like an amazing rumor if it's true, it's actually going to be about Falcon, Sam Wilson, struggling with the concept of being a black man in this Captain America mantle, especially after he learns about the kind of shady things that the government did in order to create Captain America, like, you know, giving the serum to, as experiments, to a platoon of black soldiers, all of whom died, as is revealed in the Marvel comic Captain America Red, White, and Blue. It is revealed that Isaiah Bradley, who is the grandfather of Patriot, aka Eli Bradley, was the only person to survive these experiments, even though it led to several very heavy issues down the line for that character. So they also cast the guy who played Jean's father in Supergirl in a mysterious role. And if he's playing Isaiah, like, hell yes. The other part of this is that Zemo's going to be the bad guy, so Bucky gets some very much needed revenge. And that Sharon Carter is coming back. I hope she has a personality this time. Okay. Those are my thoughts for Falcon and Winter Soldier. Let's talk about WandaVision. I feel like this needs some kind of, like, you know, sparkly, like, I Love Lucy music, but whatever. So
WandaVision. All right, we're going to stop that now so we don't get sued.
But anyway, so it looks really interesting. It's going to be kind of like almost like a parody at different, like sitcoms. So we saw hints of like, I Love Lucy. I think the Brady Bunch, somebody said at one point, like Step by Step. What's the other one? Roseanne. But there's a couple things that are very interesting. First of all, there's babies. This deserves a round of applause. Obviously, to understand more about the origins of these babies, please come to my awesome con panel on Who the Flack Are the Young Avengers. But to give you a preview, in the comics, in the Vision and Scarlet Witch comics, Wanda and Vision have babies. Don't question it. They're magical babies in very literal and metaphorical sense of the word. And on the refrigerator, we actually see a bee because one of the boys' names is Billy, or William and Thomas, and Billy and Tommy. The interesting thing is going to be how they decide to name them those names, because in the comics, those names had to do with, so Billy was named after Simon Williams, who Vision saw as a brother, aka Wonder Man, so William Williams. And Thomas was actually named after Phineas Thomas Horton, who created the original Human Torch, aka the physical body of the Vision, or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see where they get those names from. They can always make something up and just like, oh, these are cute names, they'll work, which is totally fine with me. As long as they have those names and I get Billy and Tommy. Somebody pointed out that one of the pacifiers is pink. I don't care. I need my twins. Billy and Tommy will, of course, eventually lead into a Young Avengers Disney Plus series or movie, or the more you know.
But WandaVision, when it's supposed, I guess when the first season is supposed to end, that's when we're supposed to be getting Doctor Strange in the multiverse film.
So WandaVision leads into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, but there's also a couple of other things happening here. That FBI agent from Ant-Man and Wasp is coming back. Agatha Harkness is going to be in this movie. That was already leaked. Played by that lady actress whose name I can't remember. And my favorite part, Miss Monica Rambeau, an agent of S.W.O.R.D. So S.W.O.R.D. will be there. Hopefully that will also lead into a hint at the Young Avengers movie and the fixing of a very annoying plot point in Captain Marvel, in which Marvel was for some reason had to be a girl, or excuse me, a woman. There's reasons why I'm annoyed with this, but we'll talk about that when we get to the Captain Marvel movie. So obviously, as Michael has hinted, our next movie that we are tackling with is a movie I know by heart. It is a movie that I quote. It is a movie that I love with all my heart. It is a movie that I, when I worked in DC, I pointed out to my students all of the cool places where they shot that movie. And that is, of course, Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Which also, to be honest, most of those places where they shot in DC was really Cleveland.
Except for the actual shots in DC. So the museum was shot at the Smithsonian.
Yep.
The opening sequence was shot at the mall. And so is the scene where Black Widow comes to pick up Steve. So funny. Yeah.
So the opening stuff is essentially shot in DC, but a lot of the other DC stuff was shot in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like the
all
car.
All the foresty stuff and the bunker stuff.
Yeah. But real quick, one line that I really loved was at the point where they're all fighting, Mjolnir is like just going all over the place because Thor is just going in and out from different dimensions and stuff like that because
the hammer got lost. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a really great scene where like Eric and Ian and Darcy and Jane find each other, and it's like Ian, Eric, Jane, Darcy. And then Darcy sees Mjolnir go by, Mjolnir. It's a cute little moment, you know, where they see that. But yeah. All right. It's 10:30 p.m. Eastern time where we are. This episode isn't going out. So real quick, it is recording date, Sunday, March 8th. And
AKA International Women's Day.
Yep. This episode is not going out till Wednesday because of other things that I have to do and the editing for this. So where can the people find you on the social medias?
Obviously Instagram at Captain. And of course the best way to reach me is on Tumblr, geekgirl101.tumblr.com.
And then obviously everything for me is at the Lindenbaum75, facebook.com/x75productions, and everything and anything for this show is txhdhockey.com/nerdy-notions. Yeah.
And with that, thank you so much for listening, and tune in next time when we get to Captain America, the Winter Soldier.